So, we all want to get a real grip on complex topics, right? Without feeling totally overwhelmed by like just tons of info.
Absolutely. Finding that sweet spot is key.
Well, that's exactly what we're aiming for today. We're doing a deep dive into Pearson v. Dodd.
Ah, yes. The 1969 DC Circuit case.
Yeah, the one that really throws press freedom, property rights, and that whole big question of privacy into the
It
mix.
really does. And it's not just some dusty old case. Pearson v. Dodd, it still echoes today in how we figure out the legal boundaries for journalists, especially when they're reporting on public matters that touch on private information.
Right. And for this dive, we've got some great sources lined up. Notes from a Legal Lens podcast discussion.
Yep, those notes, a really detailed case brief, and also a more standard legal brief of the case itself.
Okay, so our mission here is to kind of synthesize all that, get to the core legal principles on conversion. Like, what does it mean to actually take something legally and invasion of privacy, especially for journalists?
Exactly. And importantly, why this case still matters, why we're talking about it now.
Okay, let's jump in. Setting the stage, Pearson v. Dodd, what's the basic story, the facts we need?
Okay, so the basic story here, it revolves around Senator Thomas J. Dodd.
Right.
And what happened was some people who used to work for him, former staffers,
Okay.
they went into his office and took documents without permission, obviously. But here's a key detail. They didn't just steal them and run. They took the physical papers, copied them, and then crucially put the originals back.
Okay, so the original files weren't actually gone for good.
Correct. And those copies, they made their way to these two journalists, Drew Pearson and Jack Anderson.
Gotcha. And they're the ones who then publish articles based on these copies. That's what sparked the lawsuit.
That's exactly it. Pearson and Anderson used the information from these copied documents to write a series of articles.
And what were the articles alleging? What was the dirt?
Well, they made some pretty serious claims. The main thrust was that Senator Dodd was allegedly misusing campaign funds for his own personal stuff.
Ooh.
Yeah. And also some claims about, like, questionable double billing practices, things that definitely wouldn't look good for a senator.
Okay, so Dodd, understandably, wasn't thrilled about this hitting the papers. He sues. What legal grounds did he claim?
He came at them with two main legal arguments. First, conversion.
Conversion. Okay, remind us, legally speaking, what's that about?
So conversion is essentially about someone taking control over your property without acting like it's theirs and, interfering with your ownership.
Right. Like theft, but maybe broader.
Kind of. Dodd argued that by using these copies, the journalist committed conversion. And interestingly, he argued it wasn't just conversion of the paper, but of the information on the paper.
Okay, that's a key distinction. And the second claim.
Invasion of privacy. He argued these were his private files, and getting them and publishing them violated his right to privacy.
Makes sense. So how did the first court, the district court, see it?
Well, the district court actually sided with Dodd on the conversion claim.
Oh, really?
Yeah, their thinking was, okay, the originals went back, but the journalists knew this information was obtained improperly, and using it was enough to count as conversion.
Interesting. But what about the privacy part?
On that, they disagreed with Dodd. They basically said, look, he's a public official. This information relates to his public duties, how he handled funds. That makes it a matter of public interest.
So public interest trumped privacy in that initial ruling.
At that stage, yes. So a split decision to start.
But that wasn't the end of the road. It went up to the appeals court. What changed there?
And this is where it gets really interesting. This is the ruling that has the lasting impact we still talk about.
Okay.
The Court of Appeals flipped the script. They reversed the district court on the conversion claim, said nope, not conversion.
Wow. Okay. So they disagreed about the conversion part.
Completely. But they agreed with the lower court about the privacy claim. They upheld the dismissal of that one.
So ultimately, the journalists won on both counts at the appellate level.
That's right. And that reversal on conversion, that's really the nub of why Pearson v. Dodd is such a landmark case. It sets up this core tension.
The tension between protecting property and letting the press report on important public stuff.
Exactly that tension.
Okay, let's dig into that conversion ruling more. What's the core legal idea of conversion? What's it designed to protect?
Fundamentally, conversion law is about protecting your right to your tangible property, your physical stuff.
Right. Things you can touch.
Precisely. It's about preventing someone else from exercising, unauthorized control over your chair, your car, your documents in a way that seriously interferes with your right to own and use them.
So, for the appeals court in Pearson, the key question was, Did getting and using copies of Dodd's documents count as that kind of interference with his property?
Exactly. Did it fit the legal definition of conversion? And the court really zeroed in on a few things.
Like what?
Well, first, the fact that the original documents, the physical files, were returned. They weren't damaged, they weren't kept.
So no permanent loss of the actual physical items.
Right. He got his files back intact.
Mm-hmm.
But more profoundly, the court made a statement about the nature of information.
Ah, okay. This is where it gets beyond just the physical paper.
Yes. They'd essentially said that the information itself, the facts, the data contained in the documents, isn't the type of property that the traditional law of conversion was meant to protect.
So conversion is for things, not ideas. Is that too simple?
It's a good starting point. They argued conversion protects tangible things, chattels. Intangible rights, like the value of information, well, that's usually dealt with by other areas of law, maybe intellectual property, but not typically conversion.
That Legal Lens podcast note had a good analogy, didn't it? About a diary.
It did, yeah. It was helpful. Imagine someone sneaks in, reads your private diary, copies down all your secrets, but then puts the actual diary back, unharmed.
Okay.
Can you sue them for conversion just because your secrets are now known? According to Pearson v. Dodd's logic, generally, no. Conversion wouldn't typically cover that copying of the intangible information itself.
And the court itself used an analogy too, right? Something about news wires.
Yes, the case brief highlights that. The court distinguished Dodd's files from something like, say, the news copy produced by a wire service.
How so?
Well, a wire service creates news content specifically to sell it. It has recognized commercial value. It's treated like a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
Dodd's internal office files, while private and valuable to him, weren't property for sale in that same commercial sense. That distinction helped the court argue that using the information wasn't conversion of property.
Okay, so the big takeaway on conversion here is it's primarily about physical control over tangible things. Copying the information within those things generally doesn't count.
That's the essence of the Pearson v. Dodd ruling on conversion, yes. Unless a specific law like copyright applies, just copying the info isn't conversion of the original item.
Got it. Okay, let's switch gears to the other claim. Invasion of privacy. Dodd said publishing this stuff violated his privacy. How did the court approach that?
Well, the court first acknowledged that, yes, intrusion upon seclusion is a valid type of invasion of privacy. It's a recognized tort.
Intrusion upon seclusion. And what does that mean practically?
It means improperly prying into someone's private affairs or space where they have a reasonable expectation of privacy.
And there's a test for that, the intrusion test.
Right. The core question is, was there an unauthorized intrusion, physical or otherwise, like eavesdropping into a place or matter where someone reasonably expected privacy? Think your home, your private emails, maybe financial records.
Okay, but in Dodd's case, the journalists, Pearson and Anderson, they weren't the ones who actually went into the office and took the files. It was the ex-employees. How did that affect the ruling?
That was absolutely critical. The court drew a sharp line there. They said, yes, the employees' actions taking and copying the files, that was clearly an intrusion.
Right.
But Pearson and Anderson, they didn't commit that initial intrusion. They were essentially passive recipients of the information after the intrusion had already occurred by someone else.
So liability for intrusion hinges on who actually did the intruding.
Generally, yes, according to this ruling. The court stressed that for a publisher to be liable for intrusion in this kind of scenario, you'd usually need evidence they were actively involved in the initial wrongful act.
Actively involved? Like how?
Like maybe they encouraged it, planned it, paid for it, but just receiving and publishing information that someone else got improperly, that usually wasn't enough for intrusion liability against the publisher here.
That Legal Lens note had that hypothetical, right? What if the journalists had paid the employees to steal the files?
Exactly. That hypothetical hits the nail on the head. If Pearson and Anderson had bribed or actively induced the employees to take the documents,
then the court might have seen it differently.
Very likely, yes. Based on the court's reasoning, that kind of active encouragement or payment would probably cross the line into active participation in the intrusion itself. Then they could potentially have been held liable for invasion of privacy.
So passive receipt, likely okay for the publisher on an intrusion claim. Active involvement in the initial wrongdoing, probably not okay.
That's a good summary of the distinction they drew.
But there was also the public figure angle. Dodd being a senator mattered.
Absolutely. This brings in the public interest defense. The court essentially said, look, public officials, like senators, have a lower expectation of privacy than, say, you or me. especially concerning things related to their public jobs.
Okay.
Senator Dodd's financial dealings, especially involving campaign money, were deemed matters the public had a legitimate interest in knowing about.
So the public's right to know about their elected officials kind of outweighed his personal privacy rights regarding those specific documents.
That's the balance the court struck in this instance. Given he was a public figure, the subject matter was of public concern, and the journalists didn't do the intruding themselves, the privacy claim failed.
Now, there was a concurring opinion mentioned in the materials from Judge Tam. He agreed with the result, but had some reservations.
Yes, Judge Tam's concurrence is really interesting. He agreed with the final outcome, no liability for the journalists, but he raised what he called an irony.
An irony? What was it?
He basically questioned why the press seemed to get a pass that law enforcement wouldn't. He pointed out that if police had obtained evidence through similar illegal means, someone stealing documents for them, that evidence would likely be thrown out of court. The exclusionary rule.
Ah, the fruit of the poisonous tree idea.
Exactly. So he was asking, why can the press publish information obtained this way when the government couldn't use it in a prosecution? It highlighted a sort of potential double standard.
That's a powerful point. Did he have an answer?
Not really a solution. He acknowledged the vital role of the free press, First Amendment concerns, and ultimately went along with the majority, probably bound by precedent. But his opinion definitely flags the ethical tension. Should the source of the information matter morally, even if legally the publisher is shielded?
And that feels incredibly relevant today, doesn't it? The Legal Lens notes mention things like the Snowden leaks, or even reporting related to the hashtag MeToo movement.
Absolutely. Right. Pearson v. Dodd provides a foundational legal framework that still informs how we analyze those situations.
How so?
Well, think about a Snowden classified documents leaked, then published. Huge debate, right? Public interest versus government secrecy, individual privacy. Pearson helps explain why the legal discussion often focuses on. Was the information itself a matter of significant public concern? And what was the publisher's role in the initial leak? Yeah. Were they just recipients?
Mm-hmm.
Same with some hashtag MeToo reporting. Information might come from sources, maybe NDAs were broken, private messages leaked. Pearson gives a basis for understanding why journalists reporting on that information, if it's deemed newsworthy and they weren't involved in the initial breach, often are held liable for intrusion, legally speaking.
It really highlights that constant balancing act, public interest, privacy, property, and the journalist's role in obtaining the story.
It's a legal and ethical tightrope, for sure. And Pearson v. Dodd helps define where some of the legal lines on that tightrope are drawn.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. As we finish this deep dive, what are the absolute key takeaways from Pearson v. Dodd listeners should hold on to?
Okay, three main things, I think. One, conversion, remember, is mostly about physical control over tangible stuff, not usually the intangible information inside it.
Got it. Tangible versus intangible.
Two, for invasion of privacy by intrusion against a publisher, courts generally look for active participation in the initial wrongful taking of information.
Mm-hmm.
Just receiving it from a source usually isn't enough for the publisher to be liable for intrusion.
Okay, active participation is key for intrusion liability.
And three, public officials have a lower expectation of privacy regarding their official conduct. Public scrutiny is part of the job, legally speaking.
That Legal Lens summary was pretty neat, too. Journalists can often report info they receive as long as they weren't the ones who, quote, picked the lock.
That captures it really well. It emphasizes the distinction between passively receiving and actively participating in the acquisition.
All right, so here's a final thought to chew on, building on Judge Tam's point and where we are now. Technology is obviously racing ahead, blurring lines between public and private constantly. How do you think these legal principles from way back in Pearson v. Dodd need to adapt, or should they adapt, to deal with the ethical maze of getting and spreading information in today's digital age? Something to ponder.
Definitely something to ponder. The core tensions remain, but the context is always shifting.
Thanks for joining me for this deep dive.
My pleasure.